What's up, everyone? Welcome back to episode 24 of the Jungle Podcast. I'm Carter.
I am Matthew.
And I'm disappointed I didn't invest in GameStop.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people are.
To be quite honest with you, like, I would be disappointed too, but what person in their right mind would expect to see that coming? Like, unless you're like someone who very closely follows stock market and like everything that happens.
Well,
I don't think any
thing.
Like casual person that like likes games or whatever was thinking about investing in a GameStop anytime soon.
Well, yes, but somebody that's just like into gaming and not investing, yes. But the subreddit that is largely responsible for starting this, it had been a trend since like late November, early December. It's just everyone didn't get in on it until late January. But like it was already a thing that was being talked about, and you could see the stock like steadily rising. Yeah. So there was, if you were paying attention to that subreddit, you had a good like couple of months where you could clearly see it was going up and you could have bought in when it was still relatively low.
Okay, so here's the context. In September 2019, I believe, the guy had originally posted like a screenshot. So basically, okay, to add a little bit more context, Wall Street Bets is basically like a goon shit post investing, like, no, seriously, it's a goon shit post investing Reddit where people are just like, a lot of the time, make terrible financial decisions like GameStop and invest $50,000, and they're like, GameStop to the fucking moon, boys. But like,
yeah.
The original dude that invested in GameStop, that was not a good investment. Like, for anybody, obviously, like, if there's people listening that are not like financially savvy, basically, GameStop has been losing money. They're in debt. It's just not a good situation to really invest in.
But especially things are moving forward in the gaming industry.
Exactly.
More and more people are picking up digitals.
Exactly. And if you, because there's no point in downloading or buying a real copy, because if you buy it, you still have to download it on your console. Anyway, Anyways, their model's going out the window. So this dude put in like an investment and then kept like posting about it. And then I think later on.
Did he finesse?
Later on, sometime in like September, October, like Steven was saying, like late of 2020, it was starting to go up because people basically like explained how a bunch of hedge funds were like shorting it and they were planning on like the downfall of GameStop so they can make money on it. That's another discussion on whether that's ethical or not. But basically people are like, okay, well, let's just short squeeze the hedge funds and do what they have done to like tons of people. And we'll do it to them because we've got the numbers. And so then that's where you see this like huge rise in GameStop as like a power of the people move. I think it's fucking hilarious. Like they just did it for a meme.
I'm actually quite impressed that like not only did they do it for a meme, but like it worked.
Yeah.
That's what's cool to me. It's like, wow. Like,
and I think people are going to realize now more so than ever that like the middle class can like pretty easily make wealth if you just decide to pump a stock.
For real. Also, I think the middle class fails to realize how much power they have, because I feel like most people in the middle class are the consumer, which most companies are striving to please a consumer so that, you know, they buy their product or buy their service. So,
yeah,
kind of crazy how much power you can hold.
But yeah, it's wild because, yeah, he invested a year out. I found a comment he made from like late 2019 where somebody was telling him like this is a terrible idea, like it's not going to reach where you want to. Mm-hmm. He commented again, end of 2019. He says January 2021. That's all he said. He called it over a year out. It was at the end of 2020, like. Yeah, his profits, like, he started to make a profit in, like, September, October kind of thing. I think it was around the time that GameStop also had an executive switch up. But it was, like, November, December that was, like, oh, now his thousands are millions. And, like, people were really starting to pay attention.
Yeah.
But then, it wasn't until late January that, like, it really blew up. And it's, like, if you were watching that subreddit, like, you would have seen this, like, a good at least couple of months out and seeing the trend. Of course, who knows where it's gonna go. Like, he was bouncing between like it was so volatile at the time that he was bouncing from 1 week his stocks would be valued at 3 million, the next they'd be at 2 million, and he kept bouncing around. But it's just wild that it's like, in general, like looking more broadly, there was a clear upward trend for quite some time before it really blew up. And yeah, I mean, now people are on there posting about like, I turned $5,000 into $170,000, or I turned, you know,
crazy. Imagine walking down the street and seeing someone like that.
Yeah.
Walking down the street, some guy's like, oh, I'll pay for your coffee. Oh, like, thanks. He looks like he's like one of those down bad basement nerds. But then all of a sudden he pulls out, you got the Che, you got the
So the guy that started it, his stocks, I've read a comment from one of the moderators that said he put in $50,000. That's what he paid for his stocks. His stocks are now valued at $47 million.
Wow. All right, serious question in relation to this topic. Because both of you guys have knowledge in both subjects here. Do you think that more people that are generally super interested within games and the gaming world are now going to be more invested into stocks and like finance?
Yeah.
Become more financially savvy because of this as a result?
It, yeah. Dude,
I could see it.
Like, so I don't use Twitter often because it's a relic of some shit I used to do with the fucking whole gaming channel.
Use Twitter.
Yeah. The best anyways, social media of all time. It is gold.
I'll tell you. The two social media apps where everything starts, Twitter, Reddit.
But dude, I woke up one day and like just basically all these like, you know, YouTubers and like COD pros and everything just started being like, quitting COD, investing in GameStop. Like, okay. Like it just became such a meme that like people who clearly aren't like attached to the market were just like, fuck it. We're gonna do this.
Yeah. But yeah, it's wild because it's like obviously GameStop is the biggest one, but like it's also been happening with AMC, BlackBerry, Nokia, going into cryptocurrency. It's been happening with Dogecoin. Yeah, like GameStop's the big one, but it's widespread.
I wanted to segue in that because I my favorite part of this outcome is just the meme shit post investment like post that people keep like they'll invest in BlackBerry, which mind you does have a future probably 10 years out. But like Nokia, AMC, and they're just like to the fucking moon, boys. It's like hilarious.
Doesn't BlackBerry do security stuff now?
Yeah, they do.
Not so much phones, but they do cybersecurity and stuff, right? Yeah,
okay. They do like encrypted software and stuff.
I was like, I'm pretty sure they're still relevant, just not so much in the phone world, but like among other things, they're still a pretty big tech company. As big as like a Samsung or Apple or you know stuff that primarily do phones. But
yeah, and in general, as technology evolves recedes. and yeah
<Recedes.
laughs> technology evolves and technology adoption becomes like it becomes even more ubiquitous there I think they're gonna
big
do
words
so
hey?
Well.
Big words
so
on a good. Big guy huh
yeah I think to your point I think Nokia is in the same boat of like they're not a consumer facing brand anymore but
they're
still,
now making
like,
weaponry
like no, do they actually
no I'm just kidding
okay
just a Nokia phone attached to the
industry. Yeah.
It's just grenades, but it's just a brick.
Nokia and BlackBerry, you can buy like a Nokia phone or a BlackBerry phone, but those aren't actually made by Nokia or BlackBerry. They licensed out that brand name to other companies. So BlackBerry phones are made by TCL and Nokia phones are made by some European brand, I think. I
irrelevant,
don't know.
Both of them.
I'm 100% dead ass when I say this, but if BlackBerry had a new phone come out with that QWERTY keyboard, I would cop.
There is one.
No, I know, but like like it's straight from BlackBerry and replacing this. If my next phone, if I could, it'd low-key be a BlackBerry.
Unfortunately, you are in the minority of minorities.
I know.
Like yeah, I mean, like that
people on Earth that would do that.
Yeah, like I mean, a majority of people don't realize that BlackBerry phones are made by a Chinese phone company. So I don't think that impacts consumer decision. Like people, there is a BlackBerry branded phone with a QWERTY keyboard, and people aren't buying it. Like it's not the trend anymore.
I can't say that,
but it exists for a niche. Like some people clearly
very,
like
very,
it because
very,
they still
very,
make
very
it.
Specific niche.
Yeah. Like, they still make it, so clearly people are
buying it.
It's for
drug dealers, because you can just encrypt a BlackBerry and burn it. It's not hard.
Yeah, I wonder what their security is like. Like, that's an interesting question, because so many people have, like, security concerns over, like, Chinese technology. And now you have a Chinese company making a phone that is historically associated with security.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it almost seems at odds. I do wonder what it... What their,
whatever happened
security
to
is like
HTC
nowadays.
As a company? I remember they had some phones back, like when Androids were really popping up.
Yeah.
I remember my mom having one, and I was like, "Damn, this is a fucking cool phone." But
Google bought a majority. Google bought a majority of their mobile division. HTC still exists outside of that, but they sold,
signed
like,
to a record label and they fell off.
They sold a vast majority of their mobile team to Google. So like the Google Pixel 3a, like the budget phone, was developed by the HTC team.
Is that what you have?
Yeah, I've got the 3a.
Wait, I thought you had the 4a.
No, it hadn't come
out. I thought you
yet.
Had the 5a.
We had this discussion when I was getting it, and you were like, I don't know if that makes sense. And then it got delayed by like almost a year.
Yeah, I remember. But yeah, so the 3A was developed by the HTC team.
So, I don't know. Yeah. What do you think you guys would get for a next phone? Like, would you guys switch? Or are you guys happy with the companies that you have? Not in terms of service providers, but like in terms of actual phone.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like you guys are both pretty Google Pixel guys.
I can't, like, the software for me, like, Samsung makes great hardware. I would love Samsung hardware, but I don't want to deal with their software. Like, whenever, like, I hear that they've added, like, a bunch of great functionality, but at the same time, they also have ads filling their system, and they have, like, I'm starting to hear with the more recent Samsung phones from, like, tech reviewers that a few years ago were saying, like, oh, Samsung, Marquise like, Brownlee. Cut down on the bloat. I mean, it seems pretty ubiquitous. Like, people are now saying, like, Samsung's back to adding too many features. Like, it's just bloated now. So,
all of the
I don't
features.
Know. Yeah, it's all like, it's like I don't want a bloated operating system filled with ads. Honestly, if I were to switch to a phone, it would either be Samsung and I just say, screw it, the hardware's good enough, I'll deal with the software. Mm-hmm. Or it would be an iPhone for the same reason, because iPhone hardware is freaking nice. But
it looks nice. I'll give them that. The one thing I've always given Apple credit for is that their hardware and like how they go about making their brand look is really nice.
Oh, I even just mean like how it performs. Like the phones are very capable. But
one thing I never understood though,
software.
Okay, go ahead.
No, it's things like I use Google Assistant a lot. Mm. On an iPhone, I can't make Google Assistant my default. I can on the Samsung, I can't. To my knowledge, at least, and I know I can't on an iPhone. And it's like, I don't want to be stuck using like Siri kind of thing. Like, it's that kind of thing.
Google Assistant's blessed. So
they force you to do stuff that, or force you to use applications that you might not want to use. You can say your default email app and web browser, and that's it. So it's like, if I ask Siri to play music, it's going to try to play it on Apple Music. I can't set Spotify as my default. I don't know if you can ask for Spotify, like specifically say, play this on Spotify, but it's just, I don't know.
Why would
as
you
much
want to do
I...
that every, that's, it's a really nitpicky thing, obviously, that what you're saying.
Yeah.
But like, it's something that affects your everyday life, right? Like the whole point of a phone is to, you know, well, first and foremost, communicate with other individuals who have phones. But secondly, if you're buying a phone for things like that, it's like you want it to be, you know, tailored to you and be able to like perform on how you want it. So it's like if something like that isn't a feature, it sucks.
Yeah. Even something like the news feed, like I don't know about your phone, Matthew. I guess you have a Samsung news feed. But Car, you know, when you swipe to the left of the home screen, you get a news feed.
Super convenient.
Yeah, on Samsung's most recent phone, the Galaxy S21, they actually replaced their Samsung newsfeed with the Google newsfeed. So that's like one more thing that I would like about Samsung phones. With iPhone, no, you get Apple's feed, which I don't
want. I turn mine off because it used to be something like red something or whatever it was called. Okay. And like I was like, I like the news, but like to me, I don't know. It makes more sense to have the Google one.
My
like when I look at news, I check at Google.
My biggest gripe with, and this is the reason why I left Apple, and unfortunately Google's kind of doing it, so I'm crossing my fingers that Spotify fixes that. But the reason why I left Apple is because once they switched to Apple Music, you had to pay for Apple Music to even listen to the music that you already had downloaded and that you already paid for. Otherwise, it would play like ads and you wouldn't be able to skip. Like you know what I mean. Yeah,
maybe they changed it, but I've used Apple Music to play local music and it works fine. It's just a file.
Okay, maybe it was downloaded because I just remember I was snowboarding one day and I had literally did a quick update at the bottom of the hill like when I first got there. And then when I got to the top, I tried to play music and it wasn't letting me play downloaded music because it updated Apple Music. So I was like, okay, fuck this. Like, I'm switching. But now fucking Google sold out and they have YouTube Music. And now you can't do that unless you have YouTube Music Premium, which I'm not going to pay for because who would do that?
So you can't just play music downloaded onto your phone?
Nope. I think that's, you can do tragic. It through like some that's third so party tragic. App, but it's like difficult to set up.
Imagine not having native software to do that.
I know. Google got rid of it. So we need Spotify to like fix that. Because the thing, you can do that, you can do it on like a computer.
It's cool though. Samsung Music has Spotify integrated into it. I don't use it personally just because it's like, I don't know, I don't want my two things mixing because I have a lot of overlapping albums that I've downloaded that are older, but I also have them on Spotify. But you can, there's like a whole Spotify page on my Samsung Music app when I open it. So I can play all my downloaded music and then I can just switch to that if I want to, but it doesn't make a difference really. I just don't want it overlapping my libraries.
Okay. Quick note on like the whole stock market thing and the shitpost investing shit before we switch into Matt's topic. Okay. So it was like probably 3-4 days ago. I was just like talking with some, I was just like playing Phasmophobia or whatever. And somebody was in the party and they were like, hey, did you hear because of GameStop and everything, Dogecoin is up. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. Like, what's the price? And he was like, the guy was like, oh, it's 7 cents. I'm like, oh, okay, hold on. Let me check something. Because in 2017, like back when I was like fucking around with crypto, I bought Dogecoin as like a meme, right? I put like $200 in. And I bought it when it was.
So hold on. Pause. This guy can't spend $10 on a hard drive. Or $20 on a hard drive, but he could spend $200 on Dogecoin?
Investments. Is that hard drive going to make me thousands of dollars?
You just said you did it as a meme. It would save you a lot of
time.
Oh yeah, you did it as a meme. That was 2017 me, okay?
That was the old me. That was 2017.
I bought it when it was like 0.002 cents, right? And then it went up to 7 cents. So, needless to say, the money turned into like quite a bit of money, but now I'm waiting for Dogecoin to hit a dollar, okay? To the moon we go.
I'm holding you accountable to this. Like, if you hit a dollar, like, I'm expecting a pair of D-books on my front step.
I got you. Wait, hold on.
I'm surprised you still had it all this time.
How much is D on the D-books?
I think new, they're like $550. Depends on your size, obviously, but median price, I think, is like $300 to $500.
Let me add a caveat to that. As long as the shoes aren't more than like $800.
Oh, yeah. No. I wouldn't.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Switching gears. Steven, you want to go? Me?
You go. I'll take last.
I just wanted to touch back on architecture topic just because it's what I've been doing for the past 3 years now, 4 years since high school ended, 2016. But anyways, I've been working on this project, so I can't say much, obviously, because it's like, you know, you have to respect the client's privacy, but basically, the clients told me to go at it and just see what they think of the house. They gave me a style they wanted, they gave me this and that, and that's all I have to work with, and I have to design it myself.
Freedom, okay.
So it's creative freedom, really. So I basically, what I'm trying to segue into is, if you guys had the option to build your own house, let's just say it's, you know, like a generic house, two-story with a basement, etc., what features would you want in it? And like something realistic, not like, oh, I want a hot tub room, or you know what I mean, like you could have a jacuzzi in the backyard, but like something more realistic. And like, what style would you go for, how many bedrooms, etc.? If you have one niche room, so like you could have like a poker room. That's very common in like more designer custom homes, is they have like an area specifically set up for like poker, because there's be a bar next by, or like a theater room, or you know, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious as to what you guys would do with your house.
Carter?
Oh, yeah. You want me to go first? All right.
So, like, style-wise, you guys could obviously search it up just off rip, or if you know a styling.
I would definitely go modern. I just prefer the modern
aesthetic. Modern as in, like, what we're seeing pop up in, like, infills now, like that, or, like, modern as in, like, postmodern, you know, like, the architectural style modern. Like, there's an actual definition for it, so. I'm assuming you mean the first one.
Like modern, it's not modern contemporary, is it? Hold up. Yeah, more modern contemporary. What's the style? It's another like modern style, but it's like very cold concrete.
That's modernism. So the whole point with modernism is form follows function. So you design based off of what your function of the building is going to be, and you work around that. So that's why more houses that are modern are like square.
Yeah,
the most maximized space you can have, right?
Yeah. See, I would do a bit like not super like cold and concrete, but like a little bit of that in modern contemporary, because I just like the super modern look. And the fact that usually it's like very open concept, lots of windows, lots of light.
You guys get to play HDTV here today.
Yeah. Yeah. Shishugibon and, you know, yeah, all that stuff. what's it called? Shiplap. Yes. Shiplap everywhere, just all over the place. but yeah, no, I don't know. I definitely like to have, like, you know, multi-purpose theater room type of thing, but
you ever notice how in those shows they always have that like person that narrates and they're like, here in the Turks and Caicos, like they're super upbeat. I'm like, god damn, like, relax, like, you talk about 600 grand, like, I don't know, this is funny to me.
Yeah, definitely got to have some cantilevers in there though, you know.
Ooh, I see you using big words, hey?
I had to. We mentioned it the one time.
Can you give me the definition of a cantilever?
Do you want the building definition or the bike definition?
Oh, I didn't even know there's a bike definition.
Okay. Because I mentioned that when you like first mentioned that, I was like, cantilever, it's like opposite side. Anyways, Steven.
Oh, yes, I recall you saying that now.
Never Steven, mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, in terms of the general design, very similar to what you were describing. Like, I'm somebody that likes just very...
You don't want a Victorian style house?
Fuck no.
Like, trailer park house. Couches.
No, I like just that, like, clean, very, like, I don't know the definition, but just what you see in a lot of modern houses of just, like, white, gray, black, just, like, hard edges, like, just very minimal, clean design inside and out, like big windows and yeah, all that jazz. Interior, I really want like a creative room, like a room that I can do like photo shoots in, like set up as like a little photo studio, have so like just a like podcasting round
all,
table.
All white, maybe no windows probably, and then, or maybe one window depending on how you look at it.
In like the studio kind of thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
if you were to set up like a, because there was a project that I didn't work on myself, but I did see. So the person was a photographer, like for as a profession, and said person had the room just completely whited out. The floor was completely white, the walls were white, the roof was white, and there were like plugins and stuff that would hide into the wall. It was really cool, actually. So you could set things up and like it would look pretty seamless. And obviously, I didn't see any of the work that came from that specific thing, but that was a specific request of a client. It was really nice.
Yeah, I think a window would be cool just to have to play with. Like, what he's doing is just basically making a studio out of a room. And that's what I'm going for, but I don't just want a straight-up studio. Like, I want something that, like, gives me some versatility. So, like, having a window there. Yeah, a window is fine because that's something that... You can take a picture that doesn't look like a studio shoot. You can have something that looks more natural with that. But, you know, as long as I can, like, get it completely blacked out. But, yeah, I'd love that. And, like, a big enough room that I can also, like, you know, have, like, a round table in there for, like, podcasting, have, like, soundproofing
nice
and stuff. Like,
round table.
Yeah, like,
I mean,
I'm just thinking...
Based on your,
like,
camera background right now, which looks like you're in a trap house or a storage unit... I like where you're going though.
Yeah.
Sitting on
but yeah,
a
no, I just
couch right now.
I'd like to have just like just a big room that I can just like go into to like that's just tailor made for just anything creative kind of thing. And then I also just want like a nice big like living room theater setup. Like, that's just kind of
what about
goal.
So are bedrooms important to you guys? Like, would your master bedroom have to be super nice or just like,
fuck no, I sleep there and then I leave.
It's more of a thing. So we're trying to stray away from using the term master bedroom because of the implication behind it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
so apparently you're supposed to call it the primary bedroom and then numerically, so bedroom 1, 2, 3, 4 afterwards.
I never actually realized, I never thought about the term master bedroom. Yeah. I never thought about that. Yikes. But no, personally, I don't like a bedroom. For me, it's a place I go to sleep and then I'm not in it the rest of the day. So like, I don't need a fancy master bedroom.
Yeah. I think most people prefer that aside from the primary bedroom, you want either your kitchen and or living room to be nice or wherever you're serving people if they come over.
Yeah.
but like obviously bedrooms themselves don't really need to be anything special. Like it's just a room with a closet and you put your bed in it and whatever furniture you might need and etc. Unless it's like a condo, but for most houses, like the focuses are definitely the kitchen, the living room, and then some niche and probably just the primary bedroom.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's like for me, the kitchen, I guess, because I'm thinking of like everything being open. So it's like, okay, yeah, I guess you want the kitchen to be nice because it's a part of that. Not that I intend to spend much time there. But for me, yeah, it's primarily living room, which is where I would like probably spend my time like taking in entertainment.
I have a good story, but keep going.
Studio to make stuff. No, that's it. But that's like my primary focus. That's where I would, I mean, that's where I spend like most of my time. Like even here, it's like I have the basement with like a decent like budget home theater setup, and then I have the office where I have like I'm making a new setup, but I'm going to have a desk in there. I'm going to have my new desktop.
Where's that desk going to go, actually? I'm just curious, based on the layout, because aren't those built-in like cabinetry that's in there?
Yes. So opposite the existing desk where the couch is, I'm taking the couch out and putting my own desk there.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, so that's going to be my setup with like my computer and my gaming console and stuff. And so, yeah, it's like I have two places. I have my like more serious gaming and like making stuff, like using my computer for stuff, and then I have my like little theater set up. So in my own house it would just be that, but at a larger scale. Like I would just want to develop both of those out more to have a bigger like entertainment area that can host more people, has a more comprehensive entertainment system, and then the studio just a larger setup, more room to work in.
Okay, so quickly, something that might blow your guys' minds, because it blew my mind the first time I even heard it, because I'd never seen this until probably 2 months ago. I went on a site visit. So here's how rich this house was. They had a show kitchen and a real kitchen.
Yeah,
I've seen a show kitchen. Like a show kitchen. So the kitchen wasn't used at all to cook in.
Yeah.
It was literally just to serve guests and to look nice. And then there was a hallway behind the kitchen. So you'd think it'd be a pantry, but that's what the legit kitchen is. And that's where you cook crap. And I was like, wow. Like,
yeah.
There's levels to this stuff. Like, I didn't think that was ever a thing.
About that. Yeah.
So I guess the person saw it. It's a fully functional kitchen. That's the other thing. First foremost. But like the person saw it as more of like a space where like people tend to like gather and like hang out in like a party setting. So I understand what they were going for, right? Like it makes sense. It's just like the most like ridiculous thing to me that there's some rich a show kitchen. Shit. Yeah.
We've got the kitchen income where we cook, and then we have the show kitchen where the common folk are. Like, okay. And then we also have our show bedrooms, like just so we can show off our new like textiles and shit. And then we have our like actual bedrooms.
Wouldn't even surprise it's like their show bedroom.
Like you're like looking for someone. It's like, oh, where is so and so? It's like, oh, he's in the kitchen. You go to the kitchen. It's not there. It's like, no. The kitchen.
It's like, it's kind of crazy.
Man, that would be. So I have my show home, and then I have my real home behind.
Yeah.
All right, switching gears yet again.
Topic. So I think I mentioned before, I'm trying to watch 150 films by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So this month,
that's doable.
That's big ass.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's January 31st today. This month I have watched 19 films, and I kind of just want to do a thing where at the end. Yeah. Thank you. I kind of just want to do a thing where at the end of each month, I kind of look back over what I've watched and choose like either my three favorite films or the three best films I watched and just like kind of give my thoughts. I think you guys will have probably seen most of these. So I won't read through the list of all 19, but I'll go through my three. Should I do my three favorite films or the three best ones? What do you guys want to hear?
Start with the favorites, end with the best.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So for my favorites,
Hold on. Do a countdown from like third, second, then first.
Yes, that's what I'll do. Yeah.
I got you.
Number three.
I would have to say It's close for me. It's between Prometheus and Palm Springs. I've never seen
Palm Springs.
It's tough for me to choose. I think I would probably have to say Palm Springs is the better of the two, in my opinion. But I think I probably enjoyed Prometheus more. So I'll go with Prometheus as my number three, which I know it's not like a super well-reviewed film. Like it got good reviews, but not great.
I think I saw an ad for it. I don't think I watched it. Palm Springs is the one with Andy Samberg and Christine Milioti.
That's that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I know you're talking about
it. That was a very good film. I do think it was, like, if I had to say, like, which of the two was better, I think Palm Springs was better. But I personally really enjoyed Prometheus. Like, for me, I saw a lot of complaints that people had about, like, it introduces, like, it's a prequel and it introduces so many elements that it doesn't finish. Like, I was watching the movie kind of thinking, like, this is a prequel that needs a prequel. Like, there's so much here that's not explained. But the movie is very conscious of that. And I haven't seen Alien Covenant. I haven't seen the follow-up. So these are my thoughts not knowing the sequel. But you're kind of going through it with the main character. I forget her name. But the main female protagonist, like, this entire crew that goes to the planet on Prometheus, the crew of Prometheus, that is, they don't know what they found. They are going here to explore, and they don't know what's happening. So while you as an audience member are watching this, like, why is so much unexplained stuff happening? You're experiencing the events of the film in the same way that the characters are. It's like, and I personally like that. I get where people are coming from when they're like, the film starts too many plot threads. Yeah, it's like, I get where people are coming from, where it's like the film does so much that it doesn't finish. But that's the whole point. The film literally ends with the main character, like, setting out to find answers. So I personally really liked
I didn't even think of that when I watched that. I was definitely hella confused when I watched that too. I was like, a lot of unanswered questions here.
Yeah. I feel like I gotta go watch the whole Alien series, though. Because, like, I've only ever seen Prometheus.
I thought it was intentionally done. And I think it was a good foundation. I don't know what Covenant did with that foundation. But I think it was a good jumping off point of, like, there's a lot of cool stuff that happened in that film that I want to explore and know more about. And I want to follow the journey of these characters in finding these answers. I think it was closer to the original Alien. So I watched Alien, then I watched Aliens, and then I watched Prometheus. And Aliens...
It's like the third one's just Aliens. two S's.
I felt like Aliens took away... Like, this is me personally. I didn't like how much of the mystery it took away from the original Alien. Like, it's very much just a full-on action film that loses a lot of that suspense and that tension.
I think that's what made the first one really good.
Exactly.
Was the fact that, like, it's like, it's just it's a mystery, right? Like, it keeps you suspenseful. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. And I liked that Prometheus kind of went back to that foundation of, like, there's just a mysterious species here. We don't really know much about them, but they're threatening us. I liked that movie was a continuous discovery of just, like, what is this thing? What's happening next? What is, like, how did that thing affect that person? Like, when you see, like, because there's, you know, multiple creatures in the film, when you see, like, somebody that gets attacked or somebody that gets infected, it's like, oh, what's going to happen here? I liked that the movie just kind of kept you guessing of what was going to happen next. So I enjoyed it. I really liked Prometheus.
That's fair.
It was a good movie.
All right, give me the next countdown.
Number two.
Ooh. All right, this one's
Kill-tacular. One. Double kill. Kilimanjaro.
Triple kill.
Overkill.
This one's an easy one. Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. That was,
Not to spoil number one, but is number one in relation to that?
No. Number one is unrelated.
Because, like, you said you watched the whole series, right?
I did. Technically, so Return of the King is the only one I watched this year. Technically, the other ones I watched at the end of December. So I'm not counting them in the list.
Oh, right. Okay.
Even if I did, though, personally, I think Return of the King is just, like, The other two wouldn't be on my list, but Return of the King, just as like a finishing point for those films, is just incredible. Like, nothing, to my knowledge, there's not been another movie franchise that's done that Lord of the Rings approach of just like, here's basically one big 12-hour film, and it's, we divide it into three parts, but that film, I felt like whenever one film ended and the next began, it was like, well, the story is just going to take a break here, and then the next film just picks right up. Like, it's not like the story has concluded, it's just, oh, we need to cut a break here. And so I really liked that franchise was just such a big project, and Return of the King was just, I mean, a pretty much perfect finishing point. Like, everything that built up to that point, like, I mean, you know, it's important to clarify as well, it's like Return of the King is on this list not just because it is in of itself a good film, but because of what it did in respect to that franchise, like how it built on and finished what had come before it. It was just, I mean,
yeah,
it goes without explanation that movie is just fantastic in pretty much every aspect.
We're gonna have to restart the call real quick, so give us a second. Okay.
Again, yes sir.
We're back. Dude, you got the Lord of the Rings theme stuck in my head now.
Anyways, yeah, so I mean, where are your guys' thoughts on the film? I assume pretty similar of just,
I mean,
it's Lord of the Rings.
The only issue I've ever had with Lord of the Rings, and it's not a problem for me, but I could easily see it being a problem for someone else, is that it's a lot to get into, you know what I mean? Like, they're long movies, and like, it makes sense, and like, to me, great movies, like I'd rewatch them, there's no problem with them, but it's not something I can expect people to just want to dive into unless they're, you know, really pushed to do it, like you were.
Sure. Yeah, like, I mean, I had
think that's because you're around so many people that are fans of it, and you're like, you gotta watch this, you gotta watch this. But like, any casual person that is like told once that they're good probably won't look into it too hard, just because of how intensive the stuff and like the world is, and you really have to understand it.
I mean, to be fair, that works. Series, like, it's fine. The franchise has been out for like, since the last movie. Well, since the first movie, like 20 years. So it's like, I feel like you probably should have seen it by now. If you're like,
well, it depends. If it's something 12. That interests you, like, again, that's it's an interesting world to build around, but it's not for everyone.
See,
I'm not saying that it's a bad film by any means, though.
I feel like Lord of the Rings is probably easier to get into initially than Marvel. Because Marvel, I feel like, especially if you're looking at the MCU, I feel like there's so much like more that's not really touched in the MCU that like,
but you like is, you could watch the things it they do understand. Touch on is like everyone read comics when they were little, like older audiences read comics when not necessarily us. I'm saying older audiences and then younger audiences. It's a freaking super.
Yeah, yeah. But okay, what I'm saying is like story wise, it's easy to follow, but if you were to understand like. Why the story is there's way more backstory and like why people are connected and such.
No, I disagree. I think like with the MCU, it explains things on a need to know basis. Like, don't get me wrong, there'll be like Easter eggs, like especially like post-credit scenes won't like make sense at the time if you're not familiar with the comics, and that's when you like go online and you read like, oh, this character is so and so and it's teasing this thing. But if you're just a moviegoer and you watch a post-credit scene, yeah, you're going to be confused, but it'll make sense when the next movie comes out and enacts on that post-credit scene. Like, if you just watch the movies, it will make sense to you. Like, I'm not a comic person. I never read Marvel comics when I was younger. I don't think I read a single one. And I've never been confused with the movies. Like, but that's because I watch all of them. Yeah, they're like, you will get confused if you miss one. Like, my parents watched the first couple episodes of WandaVision, and I was like, yeah, if you guys keep going, you're going to get confused because you haven't watched the last two Avengers movies. But as long as you keep up with everything happening in the MCU, it's easy to follow. And to that point, I would say, yeah, much easier to get into. Iron Man is a very easy movie to enjoy and understand and hook you into more.
I think the other thing is that for example, Spider-Man is the most obvious choice, but like, it's a lot easier to relate to something that takes place in a more realistic version of our world.
Yeah, I guess.
Rather than a mystical fantasy world. And B, each movie alone can be enjoyed in themselves. Like, you could obviously follow the story that connects them if you want to, but like you can enjoy a Black Panther, you can enjoy an Iron Man by itself and not have to follow the story too closely, and it's sure. up to you if you want to.
Yeah,
I think that's why I think it's a little more digestible. I'm not saying that either one, you know, like
I feel like if you watch all three Lord of the Rings movies, like the whole story happens in those three movies. There's nothing else outside of that.
I thought they had multiple ages, so they
Lord yeah, of the they do, but with... they don't really like make a whole lot of reference to that. Other than like, okay, the Balrog or whatever, right? But he just basically Gandalf is just like, oh, this is an ancient evil that's been here for a while. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you don't need much... the backstory.
Yeah, exactly.
He explains. Like, oh, he explains enough. Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is an ancient evil from eons ago. And that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, okay, cool. It's an old fucking monster. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. Like, if someone were looking at the Marvel films and the Lord of the Rings films and they hadn't seen any and they wanted to watch them all, yeah, Marvel's going to be more daunting just because there's so much more. But
I would take my chances on them probably wanting to do the Marvel one more anyway.
Well, it's
I mean, especially now because it's still culturally relevant. Yeah. Like Marvel is still a modern thing.
And it's still being built out more. Like we literally just had three phases that had this huge climax ending, and now there's like still a whole nother phase or two.
I think to me it's just like mostly the relatability is that like it's a lot easier for someone to connect with a Peter Parker than it is to them to connect to, like, you know what I mean? Even the theme, even if the themes might overlap,
but that's the whole point—the setting and everything, the fantasy genres.
I, like, no, I know, I understand. That's what I'm getting at. Is that like I think just in general, the fantasy world, well done, so freaking well by, Tolkien. Jesus Christ, I couldn't think of his name. And like obviously the movies, it's like that's undeniably. I think Steven said it last week or 2 weeks ago. Now he said it was like pretty much the gold standard for anything in that like kind of realm, basically. Whereas like other superhero movies are popping up and like obviously they draw comparisons to Marvel movies, but I wouldn't say that like any of them, obviously maybe they come close, but just in general I think it's a lot easier to digest a superhero movie than it is to digest a fantasy world movie where it's like the worlds are different, like relatability. Just me.
Yeah, and it's amazing with Lord of the Rings as well, like despite how long those movies are, those movies are incredibly fast-paced. Like, there is very little... Yeah, even in the... Like, I watched the extended editions. There is very little downtime, especially in Return of the King. Return of the King is basically the endgame, but, like, 17 years earlier, or whatever the math is, 16 years earlier, I guess. It's, like, it is a 3-hour and, like, 30-minute movie, something about that. Actually,
is that inclusive of the credit? Yeah, I was going to say, it's inclusive of the credit. Let's just say 3 hours. 3+ hours.
Yeah, I think it might be, because I think it's 3:40 total, and I think the credits are about 20 minutes. So yeah, about like 3 hours, 15 minutes, something like that. And it is like nonstop. Like that movie does not take a break. And that's something that, like with Endgame, you can only do if you've spent the time doing all the development beforehand.
Yeah.
And it's really incredible to get to that point of just like, here is a grand finale that you will have your eyes glued to for over 3 hours. It's really, really is masterful. But fantastic movie, fantastic franchise.
Quick question for you.
Yeah.
Because I know you're a big Star Wars guy, and now that you've seen all the Lord of the Rings movies, which do you think does a better job of world building and storytelling?
Oh gosh.
I mean, you're also comparing, you'd have to compare trilogies.
That's what I mean. Yeah, trilogy wise.
That's the thing. As a franchise, it's Star Wars, but that's because that franchise is built out more.
Yeah, they have like three times the amount of movies,
But the let's just include the ones that everyone thinks are the acclaimed ones.
Yeah. Gosh,
we're not including the most recent three that came out. Not that any of them are like bad by any means, but I think most people, when they think Star Wars, they think both the prequels and the sequels, kind of thing, like the first six movies that came out.
The original, you know, it's honestly been like it's probably been over a decade since I've seen the original trilogy, so I honestly can't say. I would have to go back and rewatch them because I don't have.
Right, the Hunger Games.
Current opinion on those films. just stopped after Catching Fire.
Yeah, pretty much.
Those were decent though. But yeah, no, I'm Lord of the Rings. I mean, here's the thing. with a franchise like that, and the original Star Wars does this as well, they do such a good job of making you want more of that world. Like, both franchises throw you into the middle of a world that has existed for a long time and will continue to exist after. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, here's just a glimpse at like one little narrow period of time of what happened. And then you hear talk about like what happened before, like with Gandalf, like talking about like the Balrog is an ancient evil and like the last of his kind. Balrog, it's like, there's already a lot that happened there. You know, with Star Wars, you start out with like Obi-Wan is like one of the last Jedi. It's like, there's so much. The movies do such a good job of making you want to know what more about the world. Yeah. And making the world seem, importantly, making the world seem much larger than just the movies you're watching. Like, you watch those movies.
That's an indication of good storytelling.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's effective world building. It's just like, you're interested in what you're seeing, but you know that there's so much more and you're interested in it as well. I think both trilogies,
that's me with Avatar, Rings
and the original book. Star Wars do that. Yeah.
Avatar does it so well. Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, my number one.
Ooh. Number one.
Number one favorite film. Again, this is not my list of what the best films I watched were. That would be a different list. This is just like my personal favorites. My number one personal favorite from this month would be A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Tom Hanks, Mr. Rogers biopic. That movie, in my opinion, was phenomenal. I loved pretty much everything about that film, and especially Tom Hanks' performance. Like, the level of nuance he brings to Mr. Rogers, of somebody that is outwardly a very kind person that wants to help people, wants to make them feel good, and genuinely seems to care about them, while also having these little subtle behaviors and acts that show that's something he works on. Like, that's not something that comes naturally. It's something he has to work towards, and that he is a troubled person, a flawed person, like a normal human. I loved it. It was just because there's even a line in the film where somebody asks, like, the person playing Mr. Rogers' wife. They ask Mr. Rogers' wife, what's it like to be married to a saint? And she's like, oh, we don't like to use that term because we want people to believe that it's something that's attainable, that they can work hard towards and achieve. Mm-hmm. And Tom's performance really makes clear that he is that person, that he's not just somebody that is naturally always kind. He, like she says, like, he has a temper. He talks about like how he has trouble with his children. He shows little moments of vulnerability or of anger, but he's still outwardly just always kind and generous. And I really loved that portrayal and that nuance. And that's besides the whole story of the film, which follows like a very cynical journalist and Mr. Rogers trying to give him a more optimistic outlook on life, which in and of itself is also a very well done story. Like, I find it hard to fault that film. I think every aspect of it was pretty masterfully done. Mm-hmm.
I just want to take a second to really just appreciate Tom Hanks, man. I feel like every movie I've ever seen him in, he's so good. Like,
oh, yeah. One of the best actors of our generation. So amazing.
Like, he's so good.
Yeah, he's one of those actors that, like, even if he's in a bad...
Fire.
Yeah.
Straight fire. Terminal? Fire. Yep. Angels and Demons and Da Vinci Code? Fire.
Captain Phillips?
Fire.
Oh, okay, nice. It's like Forrest Gump.
Toy Story.
Forrest Gump. Gump. I was going to say Toy Story. Toy Story. There's a snake in my boot.
He's one of those actors that, like, even if he's in a bad film, he's good. Like,
yeah. He doesn't know how to act badly.
It's never the film's fault. It's never his fault. It's the film's fault. If the film tanks, it's not him.
Yeah. But this was a script that, like, got the most out of him. And I feel like, you know, with so many high profile actors, it can often feel like you're just watching them play themselves kind of thing. Like, with someone like, I feel like Leonardo DiCaprio's kind of fallen into that, where it's like, don't get me wrong, he'll play very different characters, but you always feel like, oh, this is Leonardo DiCaprio. I'm watching Leonardo DiCaprio. The Tom Rock. Hanks.
Mm, a diverse actor.
Hanks, like, just disappears into this role. Like, don't get me wrong, it's Tom Hanks. He's recognizable, but I've never seen him in a role that was anywhere even remotely close to his behaviors and mannerisms here. Like, he really... I'm not somebody that watched Mr. Rogers when I was younger, but from the limited amount I've seen of him, it seems like Hanks really nails just, like...
Yeah, it's uncanny.
Was essentially an impression. Yeah, it's wild. And it feels more like I'm watching Mr. Rogers than I'm watching Tom Hanks play Mr. Rogers, which, yeah, credit to him. I think he did a great job, not only as, like, playing a written character, but as playing someone who... was actually a person. Like, I think he did a good job of embodying that role in all aspects.
Yeah.
I guess we're going long here, but I feel like it worth mentioning. I'll go through my three films that I thought were best real quick. Yeah. So number three was Black Klansman.
Fire.
Spike Lee. Number two was, again, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. And then number one, which I honestly think might be the best film I've ever watched, was They Shall Not Grow Old.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about that.
I think that honestly might be the best film I've ever watched. Also, coincidentally, another Peter Jackson film. So he kind of dominates my best films list. So between, I assume you guys want to talk about Black Klansman based on your reaction.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we also both have not seen They Shall Not Grow Old, but this is definitely a film I feel like we should watch.
Let's talk Black Klansman then.
First and foremost, really good time for that movie to come out.
Absolutely.
In regards to how the social world is moving, especially in the last. Well, it should have been for countless years, but I feel like it's really taken a stand ever since the George Floyd protests and everything and the killing. So I personally think that's, like, definitely among my top 10 movies of all time. Really good film. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's, like, it's clever, too. Like, the way it's set up and, like, given the time period of the 1970s and how things were, like, it's really, really cool to see. It's, like, a unique take to me in that in that film. And obviously, I'm not as big of a film person as you are, because that's literally that's your bread and butter. But I think as a casual film watcher, it's something you can really appreciate given today's circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And it's a movie that was made in the Trump era. Like, it does not shy away from, like, very directly, like, taking, even though it is, like, an older time period film. It's very referential to today's events in its, like, themes that it deals with in, like, and, like, even, like, right at the end, like, when the actual movie itself ends, there's, like, a little sizzle reel of, like, various protests and such that have happened under the Trump administration. But, yeah, like, even when the movie is actually set in, I forget the time period, what was it, 70s, 80s?
1970, I think it's 1972. 73?
Okay, yeah. Even though it's 70s. It's set in that period, it feels like a movie that is, in a way, about today's, like, culture.
Let me connect the bars real quick. Frank Lloyd Wright, my guy, Falling Water, make an architecture that's relevant today in the 50s? Ooh, the 40s? Jeez! My guy was on a killing spree.
It's also something to be said that somehow a movie that's set 50 years ago is still relevant today.
But obviously it's still relevant today for, like, story purposes and, like, in terms of the civil state of America and the world. But I think it's more so just because of it was kind of designed in, or sorry, it came to fruition in that time period. Like, obviously they set it in that time period, but, like, the whole movie itself and the themes they wanted to tackle with the movie, they can tell that it was relevant 50 years ago and it's relevant now. I think that's partially why it happens like that, if that makes sense.
It's based on real man.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, the events that happen in the movie, even though they're set in the 70s, I think they're relevant today because of how relevant they were back then, unless that's what you're trying to get at.
No, I'm saying it's ridiculous that a problem that happened, like, what, five, six, I mean, I don't know exactly what year it's based in, but, you know, like, less than 10 years after the civil rights movement is still relevant 50 years later. Like, those are still the same issues. Like, nothing's changed in 50 fucking years. On a lighter-hearted note, John David Washington, very much a different actor than Denzel Washington, but holy shit, same tier.
I'm so glad that movie got him, like, in the mainstream thing. Like, I watched Tenet this month as well. Really didn't think it was a great film. It was fine. It was enjoyable, but I didn't think it was great. But John David Washington is just a pleasure to watch. Yeah, yeah.
Was his performance in Tenet a good performance, though?
Oh, yeah.
Like, was the movie itself, like, meh, but, like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. John David Washington is... I'm super excited. I know he has a film coming out next month with Zendaya as well. Like, I'm going to be watching that the day it comes out. Like,
Two reasons I am just, to watch.
That's, I'm invested Malcolm in and this Marie, guy right? now. Malcolm and Marie.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm just invested in him now. He is such a good actor. He's and so Adam good. Driver as well. Fuck. Mm-hmm. Adam Driver is... I haven't seen him be bad in a film. Even in the Star Wars films, like, don't get me wrong, those scripts were definitely, like, not up to Adam Driver's, like, acting level. But he was still the best part of those films. And Marriage Story, his performance in Marriage Story is one of the best performances I've ever seen in any film. Like, it honestly might be the best performance I've ever seen. He is such a good actor.
Yeah.
He's Kylo Ren, right? I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm just making sure. Marriage Story.
Kylo Ken.
Yeah. Marriage Story, by the way, if you haven't seen it, it's him and Scarlett Johansson. It's like
ScarJo.
They just play a couple that's going through a divorce. Like, it's not like any big story or true events to my knowledge, but their performances are so good. It's like, oh, highly recommended. It's a Netflix film. Came out, I think, late 2019, if I recall correctly. Very good.
Really noted.
Okay. What are your, like, three top films that you want to watch this next month?
This next month? You know what? You mentioned Saving Private Ryan. I should watch that.
Wait, have you not seen it?
Nope.
Oh, my God.
Captain Phillips.
Dude.
Captain Phillips.
You know what? Yeah, you guys give me the top three. What are three films I need to watch? So, Saving Private Ryan.
Mortal Kombat 1. Mortal Kombat Annihilation. Sharknado.
It's the build-up to
it was like Kombat I would pay a GoFundMe page. This guy's like, I started a GoFundMe page. So it's like X-Men plus Sharknado, where Storm can control the weather, but she can't control the sharks.
Oh my God.
I was like, I would watch that.
That would be funny.
Control the weather, but she
I got two Loki. Have you seen Nightcrawler?
Years ago, I have. I don't remember it well, but I have seen it.
Okay, so
actually, if I'm going to suggest a legit movie for you to watch, and it's along the same line as Black Klansman, and I know Carter loves this movie because I love this movie.
Oh,
Queen and Slim is a ridiculously good movie.
That's actually legit one of my favorite movies. So good. Soundtrack's amazing.
Den of Thieves.
I haven't even heard of that one.
Here's my
it's with Gerard Butler, 50 Cent in it.
Yeah. What's his name?
Okay.
I don't remember his name. I remember his name in the film. I don't remember his name.
Hold up. Let me look it up. I always forget his fucking name.
He's the guy that's set to play
Pablo
Master
Schreiber.
Chief, I thought.
Pablo Schreiber.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, cool.
Here's my low-key pick. Because I was just thinking after Nightcrawler, like another Jake Gyllenhaal movie. Demolition. Mm-hmm. Fantastic movie. It's so good.
Okay.
It's a film that like wasn't necessarily... Demolition. Super big when it came out but it's really good. It's basically just about a guy who like
domination
lost his wife and didn't really like he's going through this like weird emotional like realization. Amazing film though. I don't want to spoil it, but it's fucking fantastic.
Okay, cool.
My two picks, Queen and Slim, Den of Thieves. Both
okay,
fantastic movies.
I'll piggyback on the Queen and Slim. Watch that one first for sure.
Yeah, watch, honestly, Queen and Slim. So initially, I was like kind of intrigued, but I'm not like a huge movie person. But Shay's like, okay, let's watch it. And I was like, okay, bet. Good decision. Really good movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
good. Both in terms of story and like, just like the actors and the actresses in the movie really make you like, damn.
Yeah.
Like that was a good performance.
Performance is good. Soundtrack, the whole like narrative, the relevant, like everything, just
yeah, the relevance.
Because it's with the guy from Get Out, right? I don't know his name.
Daniel.
Such an N, right?
Something.
Daniel K. I want to say K. Is it a Kaluuya?
Oh yeah, it's
yeah. Okay. I thought okay. It was K, right?
Yeah, it's okay.
Daniel Kaluuya and oh, why can't I remember her name?
I know. It came into my head and then disappeared.
Oh my god, what's her name?
Joni Turner
yes.
Smith.
Yes.
That's actually a name I don't recognize. I assume given Smith, I assume related to Will Smith.
No,
I don't think so at all.
Oh really? Oh, okay. No. I just kind of assume that entire family is.
Everybody was
like, the Smith, most like, just, yeah.
She's in. Oh, wait, actually, I don't know. Who is
Who is Will Smith's wife? Is she like a.
Jada famous? Pinkett Smith?
Jada.
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't know Jada?
The name sounds familiar. I assume she's an actor, though.
Actress. Yeah.
Actress.
I don't know if we rate her, though, you know, after the whole.
Wait, what happened? Yeah. Wait, what happened?
You don't know about the fuck, what did she call it?
She had a little affair when her and Will Smith were going through a pretty rough patch and like were separated but not divorced with a man named August Alsina. And I guess they did that face-to-face interview sometime last year, and he asked her about it, and she was like trying to explain that it was an entanglement.
Entangled, so, that's what it was called.
a lot of people on social media were clowning her for saying it was an entanglement and straight up just saying she was having an affair with someone.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And
all right.
The it's a whole thing. There's two sides to it.
What makes it weirder?
It's a story, you know.
What makes it weirder is August Alsina is friends with Jaden Smith. So it's just like hooking up with
Oh yeah, August Alsina's like a he's like a hip hop R&B artist.
Yeah.
First and foremost.
Okay.
The funniest thing is that his biggest song, in my opinion, is a song called Entanglements, which he wrote and released in relation to that interview. And it's hilarious. And so the chorus is like the definition of entanglements is getting caught up in the sheets. And I'm like, wow, this guy's petty. Shit.
Interesting. I somehow never heard about that.
Will Smith's reactions were funny, too, because like obviously he didn't pay any of it no mind. Like he just didn't want to. But like him being Will Smith, of course, like he's a pretty active guy on social media. And I think one of my favorite things was he posted like him skipping in the video and someone commented was like, don't get tangled up in the skipping rope or whatever. It might be an entanglement. And then he responded. He was like, OK, not going to lie. This is funny. Still going to block you. But this was funny. Yeah, yeah. I was like, damn. My guy Will Smith, bro. It was really good. Let's end it there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope you guys enjoyed. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. See ya.
See ya.